Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's Friday, so we reload this week's news. What are the biggest stories? Overreported, underreported, winners, losers. Which story took us down the rabbit hole this week? And which story we remembered in 5, 10, 15, 50, 500 years from now? We've got the right panel in studio tonight. Lauren Cohn is here, longtime Chicago journalist. Lauren, good to see you.
It's good to see you. I wore my Snoopy shirt just because I wanted to have a little bit of fun on a Friday,
as opposed to
being wearing all black, which I think I wore last time, and it was so depressing. I think that was right after the election.
You like to show your mood with clothes.
Just for you guys.
Sure.
You
know, Ray Long does the same exact thing.
Yes, my Snoopy shirt. Actually, I have a shirt with a little bit of a stain. I just noticed that. I'm not sure if I brought it in with that, or the smoothie he's drinking just dripped off.
You've been wearing that same shirt for 2 months with the stain. Ray Long, investigative reporter, Chicago Tribune. Great to see you guys. Thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Good to be here.
All right, so let's get right to it. I mean, as we go through the categories and we share the stories, it's hard not to say that the biggest story of the week is Hurricane Irma. A hurricane that's not even hit the mainland of the United States. Of course, it's wreaked havoc in the Caribbean and in the islands there. But this is a story that has dominated the headlines. I mean, this is probably the best week ever for, I would put, winner category for Donald Trump. He doesn't have to do anything.
Right.
Everyone is focused on this hurricane, but it really is the number one.
Oh yeah, it's you know, I don't think there is a word that can describe it actually, because they talk about catastrophic and all that, but when you see the pictures and the things that are coming in and you hear about it, it's just beyond belief.
It really is.
And you feel like you just saw the pictures of Harvey, right, and the destruction there. And it reminded you of Katrina, because it's all on clay, so there was no place for the water to go. And who thought it was going to be that bad? And it took me back to, remember Hurricane Andrew?
Yeah.
And that was a bigger storm, but in a smaller scope of area, which when you compare, you know, I remember being on the phone with a reporter. We were live in Cleveland, and she was out there, and as she was doing her live, you know, phoner, the roof blew off of the home she was in. And I mean, and then the thing is, the journalists all go down there while everybody else is evacuating.
Right, right.
But it reminded me of Hurricane Andrew. But this is unbelievable.
It is, and you know, there's a lot that goes with this, because Florida of all places, right, and all of the United States is the state that's probably most prepared for hurricanes because of the past, because of Andrew, because of Wilma, because of other hurricanes that have hit South Florida. So it is interesting that, you know, they're prepared, and the Caribbean is also prepared, but not for something that's 185 winds. The biggest story to me was that the measurement, the instruments of measurement were blown away.
Yeah.
Like the idea that they couldn't even withstand what the winds were. They couldn't even measure these winds. That, I mean, it is unprecedented, and it's hard to describe.
Yeah, it's just you feel sorry for him too, because there are so many people there who, you know, don't have the means to get out, or may get stuck in the gas lines on their way out, or had to work the last day before they got out. And you should be hitting that road. I mean, if I were down there, I would hit the road the minute they said hurricane. You know, I wouldn't be waiting until the last few days.
But I mean, we've all done this. Yeah. I mean, there's something to be said. I mean, Floridian culture, I guess that's what I mean by hurricane culture, that they're used to it. I mean, even the size is the biggest size they've ever seen, but they're used to projections, and it might go back out to the ocean. So in a way, it's a strange, I hate to use a perfect storm, but this idea that a lot of people who live in Florida feel like they've been through hurricane watches before.
And they've also been through false warnings. I mean, I was in Hurricane Irene and Sandy covering it on the East Coast, and it was bad enough being a journalist out for 48 hours in that. And those were like 1 and 2 level hurricanes, nothing like this. And I'm amazed how more people aren't leaving. They had 5 million evacuating, but they don't have more. I'm talking to friends right now who are willing to wait it out. But I also think it's that psychological, it's not going to happen to me, I'm going to get through it.
Right.
And even just not what Ray said, there are people that don't have the means, and you would hope that Red Cross or National Guard would get them out. I mean, how many times have we seen the picture of the man on top of his roof of his home that's underwater? And even the helicopter goes to get him, and he doesn't want to leave, right? Where does that come from?
You know, and I will say that this, I mean, there's already talk about, I mean, you mentioned it, Lauren, the idea of Hurricane Harvey and the cleanup there. We're just kind of getting over that, and getting over just meaning the news cycle. They're not going to be getting over that in Houston for years. Then you've got reports of Hurricane Jose, which is right on the I guess the back heels of Hurricane
Irma. There's like
Irma.
A fourth one behind there's, Jose, yeah. right?
Isn't but I mean, there is this just amazing amount of weather that's happening this fall into the United States and to this side of the planet.
Well, the size of these have been what's really so mind blowing, if you will. The idea that you just had Harvey and it took up such a huge size, the size of several states in Texas alone, and then you come back here and you see, I saw a graphic today of Andrew before, the size of the swirl, if you will, that's my technical term, but then it was compared to the size of the swirl with Irma, and it was just a little guy, you know, it's a little ball there next to it. It's just so hard to really get a grip on, and we're sitting up here looking out at the traffic going by here and wondering
complaining
if it's
that
too
it's
cold.
Like 10 yeah. degrees colder than it was. I know. It really puts everything in perspective, because when once these things hit, it's not just they lose water, they lose gas, they lose their homes, and if their home is still standing, it's got mold, it's got water, where do you go, how do you make up the money, you lose business. I'm like Ray, I would have gotten out of there right away, but I mean, they had a really tough time getting people out.
It's surprising to me that the state of Florida, with all of the history with hurricanes, has had a tough time. Like, there's just only two highways coming out of there. I mean, the amount of, I mean, my uncle, I was talking to my uncle earlier, that he's like, I-75 was a parking lot. You can't go anywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And so even people, they say there's still time. The fear now is you want to get in a parking lot and spend a day traveling. Well, what if that thing starts hitting the windshield and you're on the street? I mean, that's...
And what are the safest places? I mean, you know, remember we saw, you know, the news, I think, cycle, that you were tweeting that, was it Joel Osteen wasn't opening up his
church.
Yeah. Right? So, you know, where are people going or being directed to go if they're on the road and their cars are breaking down on the side? Where do you, you know, is... How are people tweeting out or social mediaing, here, this is a place you could go to that's closest to you? Or say, you can tweet, this wasn't here years ago, you can tweet your location
right.
to somebody and say, what's the closest shelter? Where can I go?
Right. The idea here that the Keys could be wiped out, I think, is another
right.
question. Now, I've gone down to the Key West a couple of times, and I enjoyed it both times, but it's also kind of historical. They got the area down there. They kind of call, I don't know, there's some buzz term for it, but Harry Truman went down there and kind of established a beach, had to go rest at times, and then that whole museum is there, and there is the Hemingway House, and you wonder, are they getting all the six-toed cats out of here? Are they getting all the chickens running up and down the street? I saw the chickens wrapped up.
Oh, in that car. The person was driving out with the chickens wrapped up in newspaper. That was great
shot. so that they wouldn't be fighting each other. It's just an amazing thing.
Well, I think, like all of us, I mean, we'll take time out of our busy weekend schedule to pay very close attention to this storm, which is supposed to hit tomorrow into Sunday. Most of Florida, the Keys, even before that. So,
and they barely made the relief package, right, for Harvey. They were trying to figure out how much money.
Yeah.
Let's make
that transition.
Yeah.
And we didn't even mention, and because you had on the list, and I want to take a break, we'll get the conversation about DACA as well. A huge week for immigration. I mean, if you started at the beginning of this week, you'd been like, that's the story. That's what people are going to remember. That's it. Dreamers, here we go. And that has taken a backseat to Hurricane. But we'll talk about DACA as well. 312-981-7200. Lauren Cohn, Ray Long in studio. We're reloading this week's news. Stay with us. Ray Long, Lauren Cohn in studio, reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. Let's go to the text line, 815. Says people are the same everywhere. Like when we have blizzard warnings in Chicago, people get stuck on Lakeshore Drive because they think it's not going to happen to them.
Mm-hmm.
They're right. Human nature. Something to be said about human nature, that we do have the same sort of thing here in Chicago. We just...
Well, remember when they had Hurricane Sandy and Lower Manhattan was evacuated and all the New Yorkers were... And I'm from New York, so I get it. They were all mad. Because it didn't hit as bad as it you know, ravaged New Jersey, but not Lower Manhattan. Oh, and we had to leave. And
yeah.
Big inconvenience, folks. You know, better safe than sorry.
Well, remember the guy, Harry S. Truman, or Harry Truman was his name, who was living on the side of
St. Helens.
Yeah,
it's Friday night, folks.
Stop drinking that smoothie over there. What's in that? It's in that raspberry thing you got.
Yeah,
over there.
Yeah. Mount St. Helens. So he stayed there, and the mountain caved over him when it blew out on the sides. It's just amazing.
All right, let's get to some of the winners and the losers. Let's go to winners. You've got a winner. I liked yours, Ray. Why don't we start there, because we'll get to DACA as well, because that fits in every category tonight. But I liked yours, Chance the Rapper. Chance the Rapper gets a win again this week. He seems to be in the winning column a lot, but right here on Michigan Ave, right around the corner here, decides to open a new fast food place, chicken place, and give the money to charity.
Yeah, he was out grilling the chicken, and he was out serving the people, and everybody loved it, and everybody loves Chance. So he just continues to be on this great streak of not only goodwill, but also good PR.
Here's my question, though, on Chance. When he gave all the money to CPS, you know, he got a lot of backlash because a lot of people felt like that's great, but it's also a waste of money. Like, stop giving money to CPS. So would it be good if Chance the Rapper and the other rappers built, like, real stuff on the south and west sides of Chicago? I mean, brought, you know, after-school programs, manufacturing, whatever it is, put their money there?
It'd be better if he passed it out to us. But, you know, I think it's smart to do it to CPS, because CPS has had to go through cutbacks too. And I don't believe that it's the total rat hole that a lot of people think it is by tossing money into that. I mean, I think there are a lot of students who can benefit from the types of programs
and
that
he's
supporting.
I mean, he's not. I mean, we automatically just kind of sugarcoat it or make it very vanilla, but it's specific money, and it was a very little amount of money. I mean, $2 million, but the point being, it was for one type of program. I think Chance the Rapper, in a good way, he's a CPS product, and he does see a lot of demonizing of the school system, and he has he has an affinity for that school system, and he wants to give back to it. So there is something to be said that it might be personal to him that he wants to give back to a school system that gave him something.
Yeah, good for him, but every politician in town better be looking behind their back, because he could be coming.
Maybe he'll run for office.
Yeah.
Use a new candidate.
I would say, come on, an entertainment
guy? I think
Tax
Winkle just kind of cut herself out of the race there. She had ballet slippers on, and then the next thing you know.
Let's talk about that. We have her in the loser category. And let's talk about DACA. Let's make that transition here, because that is very interesting, because in a way you would have said on Monday or Tuesday Tuesday, you would say loser category for Dreamers, for DACA, for everything that President Obama tried to change in immigration policy. But as the story kind of continued to evolve, I'd put it in the winner category, in the way that, yes, the DACA, as we know it, the program has 6 months, but they pushed it to Congress. It was bipartisan support. And the president even came out on Twitter and other places saying no one's getting deported. It almost went from what it felt like gloom and doom to this is a good thing for Dreamers and for pro-immigration policy.
I always say that the president's a little like the governor, and that is the last person that whispers in his ear is sort of the way he goes. But then he thinks back, you know, 2 seconds later and sends a tweet on the other side, so you never really know. I think President Trump is, and I'm not a fan of his, right away knew that he was not going to deport 800,000 children who came here, you know, maybe the fault of their parents for coming illegally, but are good citizens and productive citizens. I think he just wanted to, one, slap President Obama. And then two, he wanted to kick it to Congress, because he wants his border security. He's not going to get his wall. He wants tougher immigration or some kind of comprehensive immigration reform. So this is his way of saying, Republicans and Democrats, handle it. I'm giving it to you. And that way, if it doesn't work out, it's just like the health care. You know what? It didn't work out, so you're going to get stuck with Obamacare. I think that's what he did.
And we'll let it fail.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, interesting political maneuver and strategy. And also, I would say, possibly a chance for him to negotiate on some of those things, to say, well, okay, Democrats, if you want this Dreamer stuff, then give me border security. I can see that playing out. You know, but again, unprecedented is a word that gets used a lot this week. We keep continuing, but I'm surprised at how unprecedented this was, because I when that came down, you saw people lining up, the press releases, the cruel was the word that was used by President Obama and others to say, and the way that it's played out, and maybe it's because it was a 180 by some of the politicians involved, doesn't seem that cruel.
Well, it looks like It looks like there's many things going on here, and I don't know where Trump is eventually going to land, right? I have a new theory about him, actually, and that is that he is giving trial balloons. He doesn't really realize they're trial balloons, but he is getting the same kind of effect of trial balloons just by tweeting out one position and then tweeting out a complete flip.
Likes gets the win, right?
Yeah, then he's suddenly saying, hey, Chuck and Nancy, you know, the two Democrats, they're all of a sudden doing a good thing. I'm getting a lot of good press. You know, this is a great thing.
Well, he's got, you know, the Sessions in his ear, and then he's got Pelosi in his ear, and he doesn't know. I mean, and does he really care? He just sort of wants it to all work itself out. It's hard to know what he really cares about, what he's true about. What's interesting is that you've got people like Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina working with Senator Durbin on one form of a plan of what they should do. Then you've got, you know, other GOP and Democrat representatives working together. You've got like three different plans floating right now, whether they go by age, time that people have been, you know, in the United States, or if you go with, you know, we want trade immigration reform for keeping the program. Do they keep the review every 2 years? I mean, let's just remember that, you know, there's also this optics like, okay, all these 800,000 people automatically are going to become citizens. They have to get a review every 2 years.
Yeah, right.
They still have to have checks. So I think also what this did was it could really explain to people what this program is and how this thing works, because people automatically came out. There's a lot of stuff on social media that said, wait a minute, they came here illegally. They don't have any right to be here. Well, let's look at the facts here and understand.
This is really about a pathway that was created by President Obama. And what I find interesting as well, after Congress was ineffective in coming up with an immigration policy, and what the president had asked Democrats and Republicans to do in Congress back in the Obama administration was to come up with something, craft something. They couldn't do it. They failed. He came out with paramount to an executive order and said, this is what it's going to be. Now here we go with the new president saying we're rescinding that because we want to do it the right way, the way the Constitution says. Let's go to Congress. And it feels like a cycle, doesn't it?
He may have put him in a corner. And they may think, oh, you know, they're probably all – each state is getting blowback. Their senators and congressmen, you know, are getting blowback because there's somebody in every community almost around the country where they are caught in the trap here and in this kind of limbo and wonder what is going on.
And these aren't the criminals. You know, these are not the people that you're trying to get sent back and deport back because they're felons. These are, you know, hardworking people who have achieved great success and are contributing to, you know, the economy and, you know, are needed in these jobs.
It's very interesting to me because I wonder what happens if Congress can't get it done. If again, not unlike healthcare, and what does President Trump do? Because immigration's is a hot potato. If he comes out in any form, is he kind of at the beginning, he thought maybe at the beginning of his tenure or as presidency, he kind of looked to be a little bit more soft on the concept, saying, oh, dreamers, you know, but he ran on the idea of being hard. So it could. And I also think the Supreme Court, all the states right away sued, as we do now in this kind of like, every time a president does anything, we sue. So, I mean, there's a lot still to I think the Supreme Court plays a big role in all this.
You would hope, though, from Democrats that they wouldn't look at it and keep this argument like we have to keep this separate. We have to keep separate. We can't combine things because it's so important for these 800,000, you know, so give something to the other side. I mean, that's what the Republicans and Democrats have got to get through their heads. It's the same thing with health care. Yeah. And in that case, it was the Republicans that couldn't agree.
There needs to be good old fashioned political compromise.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lauren Cohn, Ray Long in studio tonight. We are reloading this week's news. Kind of went through the winners there, DACA and Chance the Rapper. The Cubs also. You have the Cubs.
I have the Cubs, yeah.
In the way that they have opened up big leads now, five-game leads. I don't know what they – Pete, what's the – are they doing well tonight? They're not doing well?
It did look like, I saw the first inning before he came in here, and they were down 2-0, and I kept walking.
Yeah, we'll just move on from that.
It is football season.
Yeah, right. Well,
John Lester had a good game this week.
There you go. We'll continue. We'll come back. We'll get tonight's news from Rob, and then we'll come back, and we will do the losers from this week. It's a long list. Stay with us. It's a download here at 720 WGN. Thanks, Rob. Justin Kaufman here with Ray Long, investigative reporter from Chicago Tribune. Lauren Cohn, longtime Chicago journalist. Both in studio, 312-981-7200. We are reloading this week's news. We have gotten through biggest stories, winners, and now it's time for the loser category, which just keeps getting longer.
It's so long.
Let's start with the obvious, and we can go quick on this, and we'll get to the more the meaty stuff. But Equifax, big lose on that. Not only for the fact that that's the credit, it's a credit agency that essentially you have to give your firstborn to get information out. Yeah. So that's, you should protect that information. But then second, the two things I saw, and you know, this is all alleged, but the idea that some of the people at the top knew that was happening and they tried to cash out. The terrible story.
Yeah.
And then I saw today, and again, it's alleged, I mean, who knows on the internet, I just saw it right before it came on air, that even some of their, hey, do you want to help or can we help you kind of stuff that they're putting up is fraudulent or, you know, just trying to get more information.
Said, no, yeah. It isn't. If you really want to check on your status, you don't have to be
just
part of this legal.
I just think that it shines a light on an industry that Americans have had to use for jobs, for homes, for whatever. And you just hope that that stuff is protected. And when you find out it's not, you get real frustrated.
But right. Nothing is anymore. I mean, I've gotten notices for things where my information's been hacked. But this is the thing. Like, they came out with this in June. They knew about it, but then they don't tell you. Well, we've heard this with every single story like this that's come out.
Right.
And you sit there and you have to go, okay, now I have to wait to see if somebody steals my identity to find out if there's a problem. Because they're never going to follow up with you
right. And
tell you. Doesn't matter if it's Equifax or whoever it is.
But don't you think that this is where politicians would jump in and could be the heroes of America if they stepped up and said, this is not cool, right? You can't do this, Equifax, or we need to have a new rule that says if you got hacked in June, you tell us in June.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are some politicians out there writing legislation right now so they can wave it in the next day and say, look, I'm fixing Equifax thing, and even though you get screwed this time, you're going to be okay next.
So yeah, Equifax is one. The other, and I just thought about this one, and please humor me. Airlines in the evacuation of Florida to see the price gouging that was going on explained as supply and demand.
Yeah,
they didn't even try to code it.
Is that United?
Like, it was American Airlines.
Oh, American
Airlines.
I expected.
But it was
United.
A lot of them. It wasn't just them. It was just anyone. I mean, so many horror stories of $2,500 to get out of the state. And I understand that, you know, there is a supply and demand issue, and that's economics. But I feel like that's another one. Where's the tweet from Trump?
Yeah, where's the consumer advocate? Right?
Yeah. When did they come out and say, listen, people are trying to save their lives here. And you're taking advantage. Right. And I read this story as kind of my rabbit hole story, where there are protections in the state government in Florida for that kind of thing. There are protections. But this is the FAA. And this is the American Airlines does not have to do with the state of Florida. It's a United States thing. And there are no protections at that place.
Well, even another airline story this week was about the dragging incident out at O'Hare, right?
No fines. Nothing.
The airline didn't do anything wrong. And maybe in the technical sense they didn't, but couldn't they have said to the airport police, hey, you know, go easy on the guy, you know.
I guess they've been reprimanded in certain forms that I think they're trying to disband, or if they have not disbanded the airport police. But this idea that, you're right, I mean, to come out after the fact a couple months later and be like, oh, nope, nothing to see here, folks.
Right.
Everything
right.
is good. It's just all of these stories, all three of those stories point to this sort of disrespect of American consumers. And we expect more, especially at the airlines. I mean, there's just been nonstop sort of just beating us up over the head with so many stories like this, no pun intended. But the idea that and to essentially in a hurricane where we're all watching the country's feeling for these people, to have not just one company, but just all of the companies in an industry take advantage of that. It's sick, right?
And they do that all year round. I mean, it's not like we have a lot of choices in airlines. So it's not like there's a big, you know, marketplace here for prices to come down, and then the loss of morality, you know, in a terrible situation, you know, and then later they'll think about their PR later, like United did, and maybe they'll do something later, and like they did when they brought all the animals over from Houston, you know, they brought a whole bunch to Chicago, so they're going to think about it
later. I just, and again, where's the president? I think this is red meat for him, and 140 characters. Hashtag so sad.
Yeah.
Right? You know what I mean? I feel like that's perfect. I think the whole country.
Never fly American again.
Even if it wasn't a specific airline, if it was just like herd of price gouging, people are hurting, so sad. That's not American values. Make America great. I'd be like, finally, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like that would be it. So I just, again, it just infuriates you that you have this, like, this communicative tool in Twitter that is being used unpresidential, like, that could be used to help consumers, and it's not. So anyway, let's move on to the ones that we have picked. The Illinois politics this week, I put loser. There's a lot of stories in there. And that also includes Tony Preckwinkle, you call Tax Winkle.
I think I stole that from John Cass.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, she had ballet slippers. I think that was part of John's column that made me laugh. And then now she fell from grace with this whole soda tax. And it's the whole thing's ridiculous. Everyone's talked about this before. This is about revenue. It's not about health. But now she's sort of going after them, like comparing it to the tobacco industry.
Now they double down.
I mean, come on, Tony. And even if they repeal it and she's got – why is Bloomberg, first of all, in our backyard?
Well, that would be the question I would ask about this, is that it seems like you're seeing forces line up. And to have Michael Bloomberg actually throwing ads into our market about obesity, and I heard some of them today on the radio, and I also saw some on TV. I mean, it seems to me that they're neither side is backing down to this idea that it is about health. It is about obesity. It is about diabetes. It's not about revenue.
But if it is, then tax everything that causes those. Don't just pick and choose the sweetened beverages that tax everything.
Yeah, you're a nutritionist. I mean,
I'm the biggest person to tell you sugar's bad for you, mm-hmm. but it's your choice. I mm-hmm. think you know that fruits and vegetables, Justin and Ray, are good for you, and that soda isn't. But you should make that choice. The government shouldn't be telling you. And if you're going to do it, then at least say it's a revenue stream and it's not about your health. I just think her political future is gone now.
I just wonder, and I'm not one to. I've had contentious interviews, and we've challenged on this issue. But I'm intrigued by this week's advances in the story, because I have seen now you have a former mayor of New York City, big politician, who has come out and said Tony's right. We're behind this. I'm glad to see big mayors come out, or big Cook County or board presidents. So there's something to be said about it's not just a sneaky sort of revenue thing. It seems to be a health fight.
But was he unsuccessful in New York on this one?
He was. He got he it was a big, court thing, right?
He won the great big jumbos. Goals.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
He wanted them eliminated. Well, I think there's more to it too, because I think that Tony Preckwinkle could have done different things besides go by the ounce or the milliliter or whatever it is. I mean, even if you'd done something like a 2 cent a bottle thing, you would have gotten some revenue, or you could have expanded the tax on services or something like that, that probably wouldn't have riled everybody as much. Now, maybe the retailers would have raised the price anyway, but they're looking at their tickets when they come out and they see the price there for a couple extra bucks on their purchase of soft drinks, and they're outraged.
Well, now there's one. Isn't one of these commissioners now running for board president? He wants to push her out of there.
Yeah, and there'll probably be more people like that. And we talked to President Preckwinkle about that, and a lot of the commissioners, they're politically they look for an opening. They all knew this was coming. They all signed off on it. No one voted. It was there. It's all ready to go. And now they're using an opportunity where they see that there's some openings to make their political name. But I mean, that's politics, right? That's how it works.
Well, it seemed to me that it was a close vote. Didn't she have to break the vote?
She might have.
She had to push
it
over.
She was muscling people over the whole.
She didn't want people
to lose jobs, and she was making threats.
The other thing to remember about this, and it hasn't been talked about too much, back when I covered George Dunn at Cook County and Richard Phelan at Cook County, George Dunn actually pulled out the veto pen. And you know what? How much it takes to override? It was on abortions at Cook County Hospital or something like that way back many, many moons ago. But the level is an 80% or 4/5 to override.
In the county, huh?
Yeah, so you'd have to really get together a force to override.
Lauren, you weren't probably not drinking sugary drinks to begin with. I was. I mean, I guess I didn't really care about it. It was not a big part of my diet.
I think this is mostly pomegranate, by the way.
I will say, it has affected my routine. meaning I've been in a couple of places where it would be a fast food for dinner or like Chipotle or something like that. And they go, do you want a drink? And I'm like, eh, I'll have water. And I do, and I don't do it. It's 10 cents. And I probably don't even see it. But there's something psychological about the idea of, I don't want to pay that tax.
Well, it's like the bag tax, the 7
cents.
Yeah,
it's the same thing. How many times I've walked out of Jewel with everything in my hand, you know, like, I'm not paying for it.
You're that guy.
Yeah, I am that guy. But, I mean, there's something to be said about it that if that is the goal, I'm not giving my money to the county, meaning I'm not giving the tax. But it is fitting the description of what Preckwinkle and Bloomberg want. They want a healthier society. So maybe that I'm sort of like the guy that they're looking at.
Well,
I don't
know. The parallel also is the cigarette tax. You just keep raising it and raising it. And fewer people do it, but you keep raising it, and then you have the same amount of revenue coming in.
Yeah.
You raise it some more, and you have fewer people smoking.
But that's tobacco products. If you're going to say sweetened beverages, so it's not just soda, it's all of them out there. And then, of course, it's the ones, if it's in the store, but if the barista makes it, it's also
that's
confusing,
where they mess
right?
it up, right?
They totally mess it up. But then, okay, so what about cakes and cookies
right,
and candy
right,
bars
true,
and
right.
you know,
Twinkie
foods
tax.
With preservatives
right,
and
right.
you got to tax all of it then.
Right. Well, let me. Yeah, that's what that, I mean.
We you really
hear,
care
here's 312
health.
Says. What about we tax alcohol, tobacco, gambling? Why not sugar? But it's very interesting because they say why no weigh in from Rahm on the sugar tax? You know, he's kind of stayed out of it, surprisingly.
He doesn't want Tony to.
Yeah, but I mean, it's interesting. That's a Democrat. It's a move. Michael Bloomberg. I mean, it's.
He's letting Tony it seems go to down be, on her own.
Right down his.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Wheel.
Go ahead and dangle on the other yeah. side of the building.
He needs revenue, too.
Yeah. 312-981-7200. Lauren Cohn, Ray Long in studio tonight. We'll reload the news. We'll come back and let's stay with losers. We'll stay with losers. Oh, there's so much. But Illinois politics, because you can talk about the story that J.B. Pritzker and
sure.
the Blagojevich
sure.
connection that was
sure.
in the Tribune this week, Daniel Biss and Carlos Ramirez Rosa, the alderman, and dropping him as a lieutenant governor candidate. Lots going on the Democratic side of the gubernatorial race early in the, I mean, they just started petitions.
Right, right.
Yes.
They're going to have to scratch out the names now and start over.
All right, so we'll have that conversation coming up right after the break. Stay with us. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right, we're here. 312-981-7200. We're reloading this week's news. Lauren Cohn in studio, as well as Ray Long. We're staying with the losers. There's a lot of losers to get through. You know, there were some interesting ones. I before we get to Illinois politics stuff, I thought that the Not a good story for the Las Vegas police after the McGregor Mayweather fight. That Michael Bennett, a defensive end for and an outspoken defensive end for the Seattle Seahawks, in the wrong, as he tweeted out, I was a black man in the wrong place at the wrong time. The Las Vegas police don't know who he is. They think that the gunshots went off in some area.
So they grabbed him.
So they grabbed him, and the things that were said to him, I mean, just not the – and there's video of it. It's just not a good story. Now, the Las Vegas Police Department has said, well, we want an investigation into this. We don't think that Michael Bennett's saying you just saw a little piece of the video. Much more happened here than being led on. But the overall consensus is this is just a really bad look, especially around Colin Kaepernick. Michael Bennett sits during the national anthem. This is why there is protests.
Yeah, and you can understand why This plays into a narrative, unfortunately, that is true, that we see all the time. And this is something that our nation is still struggling with and needs to get a grip on and needs to get an idea of how that we're all equal, like it says, you know, like we're taught to be.
It's tough. It's tough, too, because I understand the Las Vegas Police Department being like, well, we're not going to comment on an investigation.
Yeah.
They're not going to say anything. The police union had asked the NFL to investigate.
Yeah, they're putting
Michael
the heat
Bennett.
On Roger Goodell.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. they said, no, mm-hmm. we're not getting involved in this. So, I mean, they're automatically going to look like the bad guy because Michael Bennett's story is one that we've heard many times before that has been proven true. So, and there is video showing it happen, and you hear Michael Bennett saying, I didn't do anything. And it's just, I mean, it's just right as the NFL season is about to begin, you have, instead of stories about how great the athletes are and what to expect on the field, you have this story. You have Ezekiel Elliott, the running back, you know, for the Dallas Cowboys, who was suspended for domestic violence. But then he's, you know, what do you call it? He's appealing the suspension. And then they're like, there's questions about the accused. I mean, it's everything that you don't want involved with your sport is on display.
Yeah, it's a, you know, it's a sad, weird time. And when you have the national context here of all these different things, we in Chicago, of course, immediately go back to Laquan McDonald about the really bad things that can happen and go wrong when police just don't take care to be human.
All right, let's talk about Illinois politics, some loser stories there. Senator Daniel Biss, who's running for the gubernatorial, the Democrat side, he picks a lieutenant governor in alderman in the 35th Ward, Carlos Ramirez Rosa, a progressive delegate for Bernie Sanders when he ran for president. Seems like a way to court the progressive vote and say, Daniel Biss is your candidate. Let's get going. And then about a day later, issues about Israel and everything that goes into divestment is thrown around, and vetting is thrown around, and he reverses course. Carlos dropped from the ticket. Not a good look for the first week, official week of the campaign.
Well, it doesn't look good that he doesn't vet, but, you know, when they talk these different, and I don't even know what their process is, because it kind of reminds me of the governor when he brought people in and then he had to let people go, the bodyguard or some of these other folks in the communications department, because he didn't know their positions, and suddenly it is a publicity nightmare for him. And in this case with Biss, you either, you know, are pro-Israel or you're not. I mean, you have to explain, are you to a Palestinian state and you're not anti-Israel, or are you for these other subcategories? And so it wasn't really explained, and Rosa wasn't really explaining his position very well, and I don't think Biss had time. The optics of it looked so bad, he just had to let him go.
Well, the hardest part about it to me is that if Daniel Biss, and I like Daniel Biss, I like him as a state senator, and he's been a guest on this program, but I mean, it's not a good start, regardless of what the issue is.
Right.
Regardless,
right.
The idea of having to reverse course on a decision that is really what this is all about, is about judgment and about the idea of, would you be the right person to be running the state? Not a great look. And Ray, you've covered politics.
Oh, yeah.
This rarely
yeah.
happens.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just a few years ago, the lieutenant governor for the Democrats was chosen by the people, and we started to look at him real close, and suddenly it turns out that there's a lot of questions about his background, and the next thing you know, he's sitting down with Michael Madigan, the House Speaker and party chairman, and then suddenly he's off the ballot, right? And they had to get somebody else. And unfortunately, they came up with a good candidate, Sheila Simon.
That's right. I forgot about it. What was that guy's name?
Oh, man.
I know. I love that guy. He was he was fighting for his life.
That's what happens.
He had the big press conference on the Super Bowl. I remember that. It was opposite the Super Bowl in
2008. Oh, yeah, yeah. Had his kid there and everything. So, yeah.
I guess, will it matter come election time, though? Will it all
Maybe
be?
Maybe not.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, it would matter if Biss had kept his running mate that he first chose, because it would have been a distraction that he didn't need.
Yeah, but I also will push back, because I think that, unfortunately for Biss, progressives really like Carlos.
Yeah.
They like him. He's the guy. He represents the authentic voice. So the problem that he has right now, I think, is that he went for to that progressive mantle that Bernie Sanders were going to run that campaign, and then he angered half that constituency.
Well, you're right.
And does he do now? Yeah. I mean, what kind of candidate is Senator Biss? Is he for the progressive? The progressives are like, you dropped the lieutenant governor over a position that progressives endorse.
Right.
That's the problem.
Right. And he is a very valuable lawmaker. And he's a guy who goes into the nitty gritty. He tried to tackle the pension issue and a variety of other things. So he is a well-regarded state lawmaker, state senator, who actually knows what's going on and could probably walk in up to speed with all the issues, as opposed to the other candidates who are jumping in.
Smart guy. Well, see, the other side, the front runner, J.B. Pritzker, and I've heard, I mean, people have told me, and they get angry because they feel like the Chicago Tribune just put a hit piece out on him about his connection to Rod Blagojevich. You know, that was a big piece this week from the Chicago Tribune, the idea that, and it's not the first one. There's
right.
been second or third one about J.B. Pritzker's connection as a big fundraiser to Rod Blagojevich. I mean, it's the blueprint, right? I mean, this is going to be the Republican blueprint. They're going to drop stories in the lap of the newspapers and say, please keep looking at J.B. Pritzker and Rod Blagojevich.
These are not being dropped out. I mean, we have legitimate digging that's going on here. And my colleagues who popped these stories have dug in. The previous one, that went out in May, I believe, and the Tribune disclosed that the FBI had secretly recorded telephone conversations between Blagojevich and Pritzker in late 2008 as part of an investigation into Blagojevich's attempt to sell the U.S. seat that was vacated by Obama when he was elected president. So that was legitimate. We ran out copies of the tapes. That wasn't dropped in our lap. Everybody has this big conspiracy that we're just standing around waiting for softballs to drop into our gloves. Right,
it's
not
it's
happening.
Also the response. I mean, Pritzker, yeah. I don't know anything about it. It was sort of like when he was standing in front of his building and, you know, talking about you, Pat Brady, out in front of that one, mm-hmm. saying, you know, what he had done in terms of paying taxes on the property. And, well, I didn't know. I mean, he's sort of taking that stance, and it's a little arrogant.
Yeah. The thing that came out this week, of course, is another issue where J.B. Pritzker has made a point in many of his appearances where he talks about the fundraising he did for the Holocaust Museum, which is a fantastic facility in Skokie. And now the timing of one of the grants that the state under Blagojevich gave out to the Holocaust Museum came within a few days of a large campaign contribution.
Which a lot will say is politics 101. I mean, we see that with the story today in the Chicago Tribune about Mayor Emanuel and his development. Let's do this. Let's take a break, and because I want to get to the news tonight. We'll come back because that's a great way to pick up, because we can talk about overreported and underreported. The story today with Rahm Emanuel, very similar in this way of the way that politicians and fundraisers and developers and everyone just sort of interact in the city. It's all legal.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, right? Lauren Cohn, Ray Long in studio tonight. We're reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're reloading this week's news with Ray Long from the Chicago Tribune, longtime Chicago journalist, Lauren Cohn in studio, 312-981-7200. We have gotten to the point where we talk overreported and underreported stories, overreported. I mean, hard to say weather because it's a very important story, but I mean, you look up and weather is everywhere. And it kind of has an end of days feel right now, but it feels like this is... It is a little bit overreported in the way that it'll go 24/7 CNN everywhere.
Yeah, they have to do the wall-to-wall coverage, and the weather people love it because it gives them something to do, you know.
Right.
But you got to outdo each other on.
But we're doing wall-to-wall weather coverage here in Chicago on it too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's at a point where that just you can't turn
affects
around.
Everyone.
Exactly.
Yeah, there was an earthquake in Mexico, and there was fires out in the coast on the other coast, the West Coast.
Yeah. Right. The other story, too, and Lauren, you and I both had this one, Hillary Clinton and her memoir, leaked memoir. It's leaked. No, pass. Moving on. Overreported. Yeah. No, don't care. The blame game of why you lost the election. We know why you lost. Nobody likes you. You got to move on. I mean, and there are people that voted for it, and it's fine. Just I'm trying to be objective. I don't want to read Mitt Romney's memoir. You know, this idea of someone who loses the election and then continues to be in the cycle. Let's set precedent for when we have a new president and Donald Trump is no longer president and we don't go to him for everything. I just feel at a certain point.
It's the bitter book. It's like, get over it. She just wants to be back on the stage waving at the crowd. You lost. And this whole argument, that silly show with all the women on in the morning. The View. Okay. They were totally defending that she has the right to come out with a book. Of course she does.
Anybody does.
But, you know... And they said that, oh, well, she really did win. Well, no, you didn't. You know, we have an electoral college. It's not the way the system works. Stop saying that she won and that President Trump shouldn't be in office. That's not the way it works.
No.
Scott Cohen was the guy, by the way.
Scott Cohen, right. Yes, right. I remember he did the press conference that he had was at a nightclub, and it was called Vertigo. That was the name of the nightclub that was right here on State Street or right in this area. That's where he had his press conference to say he wasn't running anymore.
Oh, yeah. It was like opposite the Super Bowl or something like that. It was very strange.
It was very bizarre. Anyway, we digress. Back to Hillary Clinton.
Hope you were listening.
Put your hairnet back on and sit on an island and cry.
Yeah, for me, it's more about there's not much insight that comes out of this stuff when you're blaming about what went wrong.
Why don't you take some blame on yourself, right? Why don't you apologize?
I just think it's the most sort of overreported story. We've all heard the story every single day, to the idea that it's like, if you're interested in that story, buy the book.
Yeah.
But I don't need to hear headline after headline after headline.
Bernie Sanders was on Colbert last night, and he said, you know, can we stop talking about 2016? We have a lot of things we got to tackle.
That's last year. All right, let's shift to underreported. We got some big stories. Bruce Rauner and the $6 billion financing deal.
Right. Basically, the state through this complex long-term deal that they finally worked out in Springfield came up with the idea that why don't we authorize the state to go out and borrow money? Because why? The state increases the amount of interest they pay everybody they owe by 1% a month. Now, I think they give a month or 2 months grace period, but you know, after 12 months, that'd be 10 or 11%. It keeps going up. So they figured, well, if we just borrow at a flat rate, say even at 3, 4, 5%, we're going to be saving money. So they did that.
Right.
But it is still a huge chunk of money that they're buying, and they got to pay it off, too. And in the shaky finances that they have, there's all kinds of questions of whether it's a gamble or not.
It's important because
we're
talking about a lot of debt, a lot of unpaid bills, so it is important to do. It's just not really the headline that you want to read, and I think that's probably it's underreported because no one wants – I mean, the city of Chicago, too. I mean, there seems to be more political energy and capital put into borrowing plans and strategy than getting us out of this cycle.
It is important, as you said, because there's social services that need to be paid that have been basically – putting their second and third mortgages out on their buildings to try to get through this rough patch in which the state legislature and the governor have not been able to get it together until recently.
But I think we're just all mentally exhausted because the reality is there's no win for anybody on this, and we're all going to pay the piper and pay the price. And that's why you're frustrated because there's nothing we can do, and our taxes are going to keep going up to pay for all this mismanaged money. I even think the governor's probably banging his head against the wall as a businessman. He couldn't get anything done. So there's just no win on this.
Yeah. One win that could potentially come to Illinois would be Amazon. The idea that a headquarters, second headquarters, this is your story you've had in a couple categories, but for underreported as well. I mean, it really was because it really was a national story. And they said, well, maybe Chicago, maybe Illinois. But you say this has got a lot of political this is a big weight for Emanuel and for
it's the
Rauner.
Bromance for Governor Rauner and Rahm Emanuel. It's a win for them, considering the positions they're both in, wanting to run for re-election, not being very popular. You know, the governor, people concerned, is he flip-flopping? Which side of the aisle is he really on lately? And what's happened with his communications team? And then Rahm's unpopularity. Get Amazon here, and it's a win for both of you. You get the big money. You get the jobs. We just reinstated the Edge program.
Right.
So giving tax incentives, you know, if that's the way, I think it would be a huge coup. It would be great for the city. And it's not just Rahm saying, oh, McDonald's moved his headquarters downtown. It's we really beat other cities and got the big, you know, the big
If Chicago and Illinois lose out to L.A., to another city, to Cleveland, to somewhere, another Midwest.
Right.
What does that say? I mean, is it that big of a calculation in a sense that would make Rauner and Emanuel weak in re-election campaigns?
Well, I think it depends on, I mean, Ray, the you're better with the numbers, the incentive package as to why. I mean, so people get the national perspective is we have a lot of high crime, but it's in one certain area of the city. It's still a wonderful place to be. It's still a livable place compared to other major cities.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if they can't make that argument, but they've got to make the financial package for Amazon work.
Yeah, I think it's going to blow the doors out of the state and probably city treasury. And they don't even have cash inside the safe anyway. But they'll find some way to do giveaways, whether it's through property tax breaks or whether it's through income tax breaks. For 50,000 people, that's not just 50,000. That would be spouses and children and could
just
help
construction to buy it,
right,
to build it.
Right, to mm-hmm. build it and jobs. You know, this would be a major coup, and Rahm especially has to be lusting for it because he wants to make this the big digital city.
There you go. Lauren Cohn, Ray Long in studio. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Let's do which stories took us down the rabbit hole and which stories will be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 500 years from this week. We're reloading this week's news. 312-981-7200. It's a download, 720 WGN. Stay with us. All right, reloading this week's news with Lauren Cohn and Ray Long. 312-981-7200. We're to that point where we talk about which stories took us down the rabbit hole. I mean, it's a story that just came out today. It was in the Chicago Tribune about Mayor Rahm Emanuel, the Tribune, did a tremendous job of really getting meticulous and looking at the times, the people, and all the different scenarios that go into essentially fundraising and what that gets you in the city of Chicago. The mayor's office was in the article saying, hey, everything we do is legal. Essentially, that they said that over and over and over, and it's true. But it was this question of when the mayor would have a meeting with somebody and get some money, and a couple days later, that development company would get a deal. And once again, it reminded me of the long-standing tradition in this town where the mayor and the developers, the real estate developers, are in the same business. They got their hands in everywhere. The amount of legal, like the lawyer, the firms, everything that's mentioned here, the money that is given to the mayor of Chicago for fundraising, for political, for re-election campaigns, it's startling.
Yeah, it's amazing. It reminds me, you know, one of the fashionable terms is pay to play, right? One of the terms that came out of this city years ago was pinstripe patronage. And that's really kind of what we're getting into here, where you give a little, you give something back. Oh, we're really not coordinating. This has nothing to do. One has nothing to do with the other. And nobody goes to make the quid or the pro or the quo or anything show up. So there's something just one off or two off or three off, enough off that you can't make that this is for that.
Lauren, the mayor's office in this article, they essentially say the mayor, when he first was elected, he made laws more transparent. he had an ethical change in the way things were done before him. But there seems to be he's within his ethical changes, but he has changed. He's evolved. The mayor's office has evolved in how they are able to get money and be able to use that. I mean, to have a return on investment.
Well, it's just it's the whole idea that the transparency is the hope I don't get caught, right? It's the same thing with the video in Laquan McDonald. It's okay until I get caught, and then I got to backtrack, right? So in this case, it's a culture. It's gone on. They can't pin me. It's illegal. It's unethical. And there's a whole culture of people at City Hall who know how to weave and get around all these things.
I guess I asked the question. I'll be the devil's advocate here. Is it unethical? Is it or is it just politics? I mean, anyone who's giving money at the scale we're talking about, thousands of dollars, to a mayoral candidate is not doing it because they believe in politics or the system. They're doing it because they want some sort of favoritism, and that's politics,
okay,
right?
Okay, your constituents, you're in a neighborhood. So you're in a neighborhood, let's say you're the West Loop, and the whole neighborhood does. This happened in my area. They don't want these high rises. Right?
Right.
So maybe the alderman comes out and he holds a bunch of meetings and he wants to listen to the people, but he really has his mind made up because he wants the campaign contribution. So then the developer gets his big zoning permit and his high-rise permit. And so what about all those people who live in that area? You know, you have to answer to us too.
Right.
So yeah, you're getting the big money and you need that for the campaign, but remember, you need those people's votes as well.
Ray,
let me just, the election is February 2019, right? So this is a ways down the road. So if anybody's thinking that Rahm Emanuel might not be wanting to run, then he's already loading it up. And let me just read a couple of points from this great story by Jeff Cohen and Bill Ruthart. And that is, Emanuel has collected $3.1 million in high-dollar contributions and more than $2.1 million of it, nearly 70%, has come from 83 donors who have benefited from actions at City Hall.
I mean, I've covered enough of Chicago politics to know this isn't the first mayor that's done this.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, there's other mayors. But I guess for me, what I found to be interesting was the, let's talk about the West Loop. And full disclosure, I live in that community. The idea that he talks about this neighborhood fund, I forgot the name of it, there's a name of it, that he essentially says to developers, if you want to break the zoning code and you want to build that 40-story high-rise condo development that nobody in the community wants, you can do so, but you have to pay an extra fee, and I'm going to take that fee and we're going to reinvest in impoverished communities with that money. Of course, developers are like, yeah, sounds good. You know what I mean? Like, and then the skeptics in us are like, well, let's see where that money goes. What are you talking about? Right. So, as some aldermen have said, it's a slush fund for the mayor. But the point being, even if you believe that that's the case, you truly believe that he's giving money. The idea that you would tell one community, I don't really care if you're against high rises in your community because I'm going to get this. I'm going to take that money and put it somewhere else. And that's all from people who are giving him campaign contributions. It just all kind of it feels like
you want to go home and take a shower, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's weird. I find it to be a head scratcher. I guess that's it. You know, like it's in funny. Terms of I'm not sure what's trying to be accomplished there, except for some sort of investment on return from the campaign contribution.
They like the mayor because he does what they like, and he likes them, and he does what they like. So it's one of those.
It's one of those things.
Yeah, it's the Chicago way. It never goes away. All right, the other story is about going away. The other story about
transition. Man.
This guy, and I don't even want to say his name because it's really we can go short on this, but it's becoming a viral hit. A guy writes for Huffington Post that he's leaving Chicago. He doesn't like this town. He moved here from San Francisco, and bye bye. He's like, this town has a lot of problems, and it wasn't even.
I've been to San Francisco recently. There's homeless people everywhere. They let everybody out of the mental institution.
You would think
it's
that
awful
it,
in
you would
San
think
Francisco, and
this,
I love it there.
It would be more societal ill stuff, but it's not. He was hit on his bike. He couldn't pick up women in a bar.
Now we're getting to the
real
story.
And it just he talked about our complex being a small city, and everything is. It doesn't matter. The rabbit hole point to me is I'm upset that we take the bait. That Chicagoans on social media get all riled up, and we say, because it's once a year or so, maybe 2 years, that a BuzzFeed or a Huffington Post or other place, they like to publish these because they're huge hits. They get huge page views. We go crazy. They laugh all the way back to the bank. And I feel like let's shed that second city mentality of getting riled up about someone leaving our city. Millions leave this city every day. That's hyperbole, of course. But millions come in, and we're a big city, and there's a lot of people that can make it and can't and don't and won't and will and should and could. You know, there's a lot going on, and I don't think we need to document one person's story about how they didn't make it, and then they have to turn on the city, and we get all riled up about it. It just makes me –
I like the face on the guy, though. Like, I didn't even read the story. You know more than I did. I saw it, and I just bypassed it, but I knew what you were talking about, but I just liked his face, the way he looked. He just looked so angry.
He had a faux hawk.
Dude, you should go back to another place because this is the Midwest, and we at least smile in the Midwest if we're going to leave.
I mean, his point was he doesn't like the Midwest, and that's fine. Good.
What's not to like?
But good. I don't care. Like, I mean, the idea, the irony is that he's going to New York.
Right.
You know, good luck.
Good luck.
But that's the thing. You're not reading in BuzzFeed or Huffington Post or those places or any place or why I'm leaving New York. We know why you're leaving New York. Couldn't make it.
Yeah.
Well, you couldn't make it in Chicago. So end of story. It's a dumb story. Don't click on it.
And why'd you leave San Francisco?
Yeah, right. That's what he says in the article. That's what Chicagoans all say. That's why did I leave San Francisco? But I agree with you. All right. So last, let's get to the final category. I think it's pretty simple, but maybe we'll change it up. Which story is going to be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 20, 50, 500 years from tonight or this week? Ray, what do you think?
Yeah, the Cubs repeat for the World Championship.
It starts this week. the sweep of the Brewers, right? Yeah.
Actually, let me look up at the score right
now. Yeah, it's not going well.
But, you know, it was 2-0 against them. But obviously it's Irma. And the double action here of Harvey and then Irma and the catastrophe that this country has had to deal with here because of it.
Do you think Irma and Harvey will be on the scale and remembered as much as a Hurricane Katrina?
Yeah, because you look at the devastation and the years it took for Katrina to rebuild, and you're looking at that in Texas as well. And, I mean, who knows what Florida and the cost it's going to be. But people always reflect on, where was I when this happened? And it's not just, I'm a resident there, I have a relative there, I have a home there, I like to travel there. And then it's going to be, well, we care about those communities. Let's go travel there and help the economy there. So, yeah.
Lauren, you have that as the same story that will be remembered?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Number one.
Number one.
You got to wonder if Rahm is going to look at the wildfires out west, and he's going to look at the floods in Texas and the hurricanes in Texas and the hurricanes in Florida and say, you know, we don't have those things here in Chicago. Yet. Amazon, why don't you move out
right
there?
Right. I thought you were going to say, I thought he's going to go to city council tomorrow and be like, let's get a fund going, because Chicago is not immune, especially with a winter coming up here. And we also, I mean, in the last couple of years, when the summer ends and the fall starts, and there is some nasty weather that comes through Washington, Illinois, and the tornadoes was November, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so we're not immune to that in the Midwest, and that's what I would, if I were the state and the city, I'd be like, you see what's happening there? That's probably going to happen at some point or another in our area. Again, let's get our ducks in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ray Long, Chicago Tribune investigative reporter. Lauren Cohn, longtime Chicago journalist. You guys, great job tonight.
Great to be here.
Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Reloading this week's news.